you've got somewhere like India, and you've got so many different languages, isn't it more practical to have Latin between all of them?
No, I wouldn't go by this theory. Having various languages, groups and various cultures, that we have to have something uniform to guide us. I don't think each one can develop the same thing, bring about uniformity in their own languages to understanding the basics, foundations of faith, pillars of faith. We don't have to have something common. Gone are the days. There was a time we spoke about it, but now I wouldn't like to speak about it. Neither would anybody like to accept this jargon to say, no, it should be Latin. No, far from it. We would like to have something of our own, something which touches our very lives, our inner lives, our spiritual growth, and brings in harmony with the others. I mean, we are able to live with one another with this deep sense of faith that we have.
With your growing up in Cuba, and also you've worked in Latin America, you've met people who have different levels of education. Now, was this affected? But did Latin reach out to them? Or is it easier to give the gospel message through Spanish?
Well, definitely, again, to have the peoples in different languages and different countries listening to the liturgy in their own language. The Mass itself is evangelization. It's bringing the mystery of Christ into the people. If you said that in a strange language, they will never understand that. On top of that, in those days, remember, the Mass was, the priest was giving the back to the congregation the whole time. So for them, it was a mystery type of thing, a magic thing that the priest was doing in the altar that nobody could see. At one point, he would turn around and the consecration, and they would see what was going on, but actually they didn't understand that. And I think it's important that people understand what they... It was so incredible when you saw the priest facing the people, participating with the congregation, the real church, the real community of the loving community of the church. It was a whole difference of that. And again, the people could understand what the priest was talking about. The priest could understand what the liturgy was about. Then before that, it was a magic thing. That's why we have in so many countries still magic. And this mixture of cultures and all that with the Mass and with the saints and all that, which is something that is not Christian at all most of the time, but now people can understand that. They know what the liturgy is about. They know what the readings are about. They know what the words of the consecration are about and the whole mystery, spiritual mystery behind it.
Father Alfie Benn, the Jesuit head of Vatican Radio South Asia programme, is an Indian. He can talk about his experiences in a very diverse mixture of languages and background. At the same time, Father Ernesto Travieso, a Cuban and the head of Vatican Radio's Latin American programme, is able to speak about the life on the opposite side of the world, where Catholics might come from a very diverse educational upbringing. The Mass reaches out to all traditions, languages and cultures. In fact, Father Alfie discovered that once Mass could be celebrated in vernacular languages, people of different religions could share in and understand Catholics at prayer.
Previously, I would say, it was all taken as blind faith. It was nothing more than blind faith. Okay, our parents have doctrinated us, given us that doctrine, so we carry on. But what was there for them to communicate? Of course, over the years, religiosity was maintained and kept by the rosary. The rosary was one thing, was a full Bible for them. That's how faith kept on growing from one family to another, from one generation to another. And that was mostly said in Latin too. But then when the vernaculars came in, there was a little more joy and graciousness that was added to every occasion when the people gathered together. Here, this is what we can understand. This is what we can reveal. This was an added impetus to what the Hindus thought. The Hindus came, the Muslims came, and they would be sitting down for the occasion, sitting down together, to see how a Christian prays. It was an ideal, she said, to see how the Christians pray together. How the Christians, early Christians, came together, shared things together, remained together, prayed together. This was an implication. You can imagine that was said in Latin. And now they see this in day-to-day life, see how Christians live together, come together. So this devotion around the statue of Our Lady, devotion in the church, devotion wherever they went, and it brought so much of life and enthusiasm in people. They knew that there was something solid foundation that they had with themselves on which no one could touch or move them.
I personally spent 9 months in Nigeria and 12 years in Zambia. For most of that time, I was based in remote missions where very few people could speak English. Many had never had the opportunity to attend school. Parishes would frequently have a central church and 70 or more widely scattered outstations, which the priests would visit as often as they could. Because of the isolation of the outstations, people were often only able to attend Mass every few months. It was, therefore, a vital necessity that it should be something they could understand and cherish. A priest might be available for one day, 3 or 4 times in the course of a year. For the rest of the time, all religious education was in the hands of the catechists, people from their own villages, with abundant goodwill and generosity, but with their formal courses in religious education measured in months rather than years. As Archbishop Mark Coleridge of Canberra, Australia, points out, Christianity builds on culture. That is why the Missal is so relevant to life.
So, Christianity has a whole history of building upon culture. Certainly the Catholic Church has that. And here again, the Missal gathers up that which is powerful and rich from all kinds of sources. And see, the Roman Missal, one of its points of genius, was a capacity to take elements from all over the place and bring them into this polyphony. It is really one of the points of genius of the Roman Church, it seems to me, but certainly of the Roman Missal. Because when you talk about the Roman Missal, it is not just the Church of Rome that finds voice there. The Church of Rome is the original magpie. That's why it's called Catholic. So that bits and pieces are garnered from all over the place and put into this quite spectacular mosaic or polyphony that really looks beyond the sea and the liturgy of Rome itself to the Church Universal.
The Archbishop is the chairman of the Roman Missal Editorial Committee, which is responsible for translating the Missal and lectionary into English. So how does he see the introduction of a new translation of the Missal and lectionary into a church which spans the vast global panorama of humanity?
But one of the other things that becomes increasingly clear is that it won't be enough simply to produce the Missal. There needs to be a very, very effective and large-scale catechetical effort to help people understand what's going on. Because some people will say, well, this is just tinkering with words, fiddling while Rome burns. I don't believe that at all. If I did believe that, I wouldn't be involved as I am in the work, consigning so much of my time and energy to it. It's not just tinkering with words. Something deep and powerful is going on, I think, under the impulse of the Holy Spirit. But there needs to be a very, very large-scale catechetical effort that will accompany the texts of the Missal to lead people more deeply into the riches of the liturgy and try and help them to see what's going on. Again, like that guided tour of St. Peter's Basilica, people need to be helped to see and to hear. You can't just throw things at them. And the other thing is, I think 40 years after the Council, we're at a point where you can't just drop a new Missal upon people. They need to have things explained to them and to be made partners in the whole process. I don't think it can be just delivered by fiat. So with priests and people, there is a great need for a very sophisticated, incisive liturgical catechesis. But what a fantastic opportunity that is. Because it's not as if the whole church has learned everything in these 40 years. In a sense, we've only just begun to learn. But here is a new moment, a new opportunity given to the whole church to be drawn more and more deeply into the inexhaustible depths of the liturgy.
It's an incredible pilgrimage of faith.
It really is, and it's endless. Once we've started it, there will be no end. But that's thrilling to me, that it's a great pilgrimage of faith, but I regard it as a great gift to me personally, but I also regard it as a great gift to the whole church. And I would very much hope that all the priests and all the people will come to see that, even those who are perhaps uncertain about what's happening at this time.